Coming legal. They're coming legal. There's a difference. Good morning, y'all. Welcome back to Rosie on the House. Happy birthday, America! We're here with history professor Dr. David Dean from Grand Canyon University. We try and wrangle him into the studio three or four or five or six times a year. He is a constant source of education and entertainment. We're talking today about the Declaration of Independence, really Declaration of Separation.
Right, a divorce document.
A divorce document. Now, so we don't know how this was actually delivered to the king.
Well, again...
We could just assume, I guess.
It goes to the king, it goes to the parliament over there, and they're probably not very happy, and somewhere along the way, they say, no, I don't think we're going to let these colonists go do their own thing. We really like that over there. We just finished this big war about 10 years ago that fought for all this land. We won from the French and Indian Wars. We're certainly not just going to give it to a bunch of upstart colonists over there. So it's time for us to clamp down and go over there and put those colonists in their place.
The Declaration of Independence is made up of three parts, the preamble, and then a list of grievances. What do you think King George's response to these grievances was?
Well,
but you say he was cuckoo anyway.
Yeah, he was a little off his rocker a bit there. So I'm not sure
he thought he was a chicken. Is that really true?
Yeah, I mean he thought there's a variety of different things. He had episodes where he was just not quite there. Historians aren't quite sure. They debate kind of what might have caused that. But he was not the most lucid king. And so Parliament has to deal with this.
Okay, all right. So Parliament's going through these grievances.
And some of them don't make sense to Parliament because they're like, what are you guys talking about over there, right?
Like what? Which one would not have made sense to the Parliament?
So here's the first one. So item number 16 on your list, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world. That sounds kind of weird. But what it is that's actually an attack on the Navigation Acts. These were a series of acts between 1651 and 1696. Now, understand that Parliament didn't really have a comprehensive, okay, this is how we're going to govern the colonies. So in that 50-year period of time, they kept passing laws trying to regulate trade, trying to make sure that the colonies were behaving so they could get the most money out of them. So like you couldn't trade with another country. You had to put
any
other country. Stuff had to go to the mother country. Raw materials had to go to there. You had to buy stuff from the mother country. And so to check on that, they would say, okay, well, let's pass a law to make sure that the ship captain is accountable for all the stuff on his ship and where it came from. Or make sure that the crew is not bringing stuff on or doing side deals. So the crews have to be all English. These different kind of navigation laws that governed shipping was how they were managing the trade. And so the colonists saw this as limiting because they're like, why can't I buy stuff from France or from the Netherlands or from somewhere else? Why can't I buy their stuff? And England's like, no, you got to buy our stuff because we're trying to keep our merchants in England employed so they make finished goods. You guys over there in the colonies make raw materials, send it to us. We turn them into things and send it back to you. That's the relationship between a mother country and a colony.
Which was costly to the colonists.
Exactly, because they don't get free trade. They don't have the ability to, and they have to pay higher prices and taxes because everything's fixed through these navigation acts. And so that's one of the grievances that they put down.
But that's the 16th grievance they put down.
Well,
right?
They're listing them kind of in the order they list them is not chronological to the events.
Okay.
They list them kind of in order of, say, importance, so to speak.
Okay.
Some of them kind of band together. And for example, when we get to later on, there's a series that go around the Intolerable Acts, which come later on. Item number 17, number 7, talks about its endeavor to prevent the population of these states from obstructing the laws of naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither. What that's talking about is the proclamation line. After the war,
yes,
the king's like, okay, there's a bunch
of... The French and Indian War.
Right. After the French and Indian War, there's a bunch of Native Americans out there that are kind of ticked off at us.
Yes.
There's a bunch of French people out there kind of ticked off. We don't really want our colonists going over the Appalachian Mountains and settling in Ohio and whatnot because we'd have to send troops out there and it's expensive. So he drew a line down the map and said, don't go past that line.
And the colonists grieved about that.
They didn't like that because that limited their prosperity, that limited their expectation. They're like, hey, we fought and bled and died for that stuff. We should get the bounty of that. Number 11, he has kept among us in times of peace standing armies. This was the Quartering Act in 1765, which basically, again, the colonial authorities didn't want to bring all these troops from the war back to England because now they'd be unemployed. What do you do with them? Well, let's leave them over there to kind of keep an eye on things, and let's make the colonists pay their room and board. So the Quartering Act allowed soldiers to live in people's homes and inns and pubs and that kind of stuff. And the colonists just had to bear that cost. Well, colonists are like, we don't need a standing army. Why are there troops with guns kind of keeping an eye on us? And even as today, as Americans, we don't like standing armies in our neighborhoods and in our communities and whatnot, right? We keep our standing army out to the side.
You're not letting us trade with the world. You're telling us where we can or cannot go within this country we have come to dominate, and you've got a standing army in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm. And here's the biggie.
And dining room.
Right, and here's the biggie, taxes. Mm. Number 17, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, making judges without their consent, for depriving us in cases of trial by jury, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with their own powers. These all relate to the Stamp Act and to the Townsend Acts and the laws that were passed to generate revenue in order to pay for that war that basically gave America all that land. And so, like the Stamp Act, you had to buy special paper to go and do your legal contracts and your deeds and do all your paperwork on. And if you didn't have that stamped paper, it was not an official document. Well, it's also kind of egregious because if you walk into some sort of official's office and say, I need a piece of paper so that I can write up this contract or this bill of sale for land or something, the government can say, well, where is that land? Is it on the other side of the line that you can't go on? And so it was a way of not only making them pay for stuff, but it was a way of the government looking after all their transactions on all their stuff. Remember, the colonists weren't paying their taxes all that much. They weren't doing all those customs things.
That's what they call the good old days.
And so the Stamp Act was not just an annoyance of bureaucracy, but it was the egregious interference of the government looking into their private lives and what they were doing.
And you have to be grieved to the point of knowing you're going to be ticking off the strongest, most powerful army and nation on the globe.
Yeah.
You have to be pretty grieved.
Well, and they know what that's like because the army was shooting at them. I mean, you have the Boston Massacre, right? Where British troops shot at rioters in the streets of Boston.
And the dates on that? Prior to, just approximate.
The Boston Massacre was in 1770, where a mob of about 60 people in the snow started throwing rocks at some soldiers, and somebody shot, and a couple people were killed, and the soldiers were eventually put on trial. John Adams is actually one of the people that represented soldiers and whatnot. But that was an event where, if we don't have soldiers pointing guns at us, then we wouldn't have this violence. You have Lexington and Concord, 1775, where the British say, hey, you know, they've got these stockpiles of munitions out on the frontier from that leftover from the old French and Indian War. We better go out there and get those before the colonists do. So the colonists, the Minutemen, we don't even have a Continental Army at the time. The Minutemen get in the way and start to harass those soldiers out there. They get out there, Concord, Lexington, Concord. You have the shot heard around the world, and they're fighting there. You have the Battle of Bunker Hill goes off in 1775, all before we've signed our Declaration of Independence.
Wow.
Now, out of curiosity, this has never been mentioned. I never even thought of it till now, but earlier you said the French and Indian War got done, and the English was broke, so they started taxing the colonies. Was that part of the timing on that? Did they think, you know what, England's so broke, they can't finance a war against us. This is the best time to strike it.
That might have been a little bit of a, I'm not sure that they were quite thinking that far ahead, but they were kind of thinking that, you know, if you send these troops back home, we can take care of ourselves. Why would they want to shoot? We're Englishmen. This is like they're shooting. They're not our enemy. And so, but they were being, they felt like they were being treated as an enemy.
Absolutely fascinating. Here, talking through the Declaration of Independence on America's birthday with history professor Dr. David Dean from Grand Canyon University. I love this stuff. I love our Arizona staycation, sponsored by Sanderson Ford.
I do. This month we're talking about Coconino County. And, of course, the biggie in Coconino County is the Grand Canyon.
Yes.
Do you know that 83% of visitors are from the United States? No, are from the United States.
Are you serious?
Do you know what the percentage of Arizonans who have gone to the Grand, who annually go to the Grand Canyon?
How many percentage of Arizonans go to the Grand Canyon? I would say less than 3%.
Well, it's 8.9%.
Oh, it is.
But don't you think it should be 100%? How can you live here and not have seen the Grand Canyon?
Well, like, do I have to go every year to hit that statistic?
No. Oh. But I just think, you ask a lot of Arizonans, they've never been up there.
Oh, so, it's unbelievable how many people have never. Oh, I've lived here 20 years, you know, never been to the Grand Canyon. Mm.
So this month we have a couple going out, and they took Mustang. I'll let you talk about that. But in that car, they also got a basket from the Designing Women of Arizona. And her tagline is, "Your personal concierge gift basket artist." And I'm telling you, she is an artist. If you give her a theme, she'll put together a beautiful gift basket for whatever the occasion. And she has really wowed our staycation winners.
And so register for an Arizona staycation at rosieonthehouse.com. We pick a winner every month. The winner for July will be Coconino County. You will be going to Coconino County, where, in fact, one of our great lodging partners, and if you've never been to our website, Rosie on the House, to look at staycations and register for it, we have lodging partners in Flagstaff, Page, Sedona, Pine Top, Bisbee, Lake Powell, Scottsdale, Prescott, Jerome, Winslow, Greer, Havasu City, virtually across the whole state. But in particular, one of the ones that our guests really enjoy the most is the Best Western Plus Inn of Sedona. Rooftop deck where you can just sit up there sipping your favorite beverage at sunset, watch that golden sunset fall on that salmon red area of Sedona. It's absolutely gorgeous. If you're in the Sedona area and you're looking for a great place to hang your hat for a day or two, make sure you take a look at Best Western Plus Inn of Sedona. Thank you, Sanderson Ford, for sponsoring it. You win, and you get to pick a car off the demo lot. Last folks just took a Mustang.
They did.
Somebody else took the electric car a couple months ago, and then a lot of people like to take the F-150.
And this month's winner will get to pick a place in Coconino County they want to visit.
There you go. Well, and you can go whenever you want. You just need to let us know, and we arrange the lodging for you. So it'd be a great little getaway coming up before school starts to get up there and get in the cool, cool weather of Coconino County. So you can only register for it one place, rosieonthehouse.com. All right, we're in the middle of a conversation on the Declaration of Independence with Dr. David Dean, talking about the grievances the colonists were making a list of, including it in the Declaration of Independence, which can be thought of as a declaration of separation, a document for divorce from the King of England. We're going to be back with more on that right after this. Y'all stay tuned.